Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had the taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone. Thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
People who, like the founder of the show, recognize they're on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustment to be an amazing person, share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength, capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulder. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is Part Sinner, Part Saint on Late Night Poets Blog Talk Radio. We are a group on allpoetry.com. You don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can read along with us, you can make comments in the chat, and you can enter our contest to be part of the show. I'm Aphasiana, and with me I have Babbler. Hello, Babbler.
Hello. How's it going?
All right. My husband's gone to Shambhala, so I'm all by myself, as he raves. But it's been a festival kind of summer where I'm at a festival every weekend. So in a way, I'm kind of glad to just, you know, sleep this one off. How are you feeling?
I'm getting there. The last 2 days were really brutal. Like, I didn't really get out of bed. So today was better. So I had a fever for a while. Fever's gone. I'm just kind of left with some congestion and a whole lot of fatigue.
Yeah, I can hear that congestion. And that fatigue lasted about 2 weeks for me. So I hope that you get past it really fast. And I'm glad you're past the worst of it. So everyone healing thoughts for Babbler.
I'll try to mute the coughing. I'll do my best. It's very sudden. Like, I don't get any warning. There's no, like, crazy throat tickle or nothing. It's just cough. Makes it very hard to, like, even cover it.
Yeah.
I feel bad. I'm just at home coughing everywhere. I'm sorry.
At least you're home doing it, you know? So you're keeping
yeah,
you
I,
there.
Yeah, I haven't gone anywhere. I haven't gone anywhere, so.
That's good. Yeah, when I had it, my husband had me quarantined to just my bedroom, so you know, I wouldn't get him sick. And we managed to not get him sick, which was miraculous, but I didn't leave the room unless I had to go to the bathroom.
My husband is, he's getting sick, so he's definitely got it, but he seems to have it much more mildly than I did, unless he doesn't get out of bed tomorrow. But, which is good. I want him to have it more mild than I had enough. My 2 days were pretty bad.
We don't need him to suffer, just so it's equal.
No. No, I'm not one of those. No, by all means, let him get by easily. We don't need lots of people suffering. I feel kind of lucky because I actually got up to go to work, and I had a slight sore throat. And I was just like, yeah, just take a COVID test just in case. I'm like, it's a really mild sore throat. I had no other symptoms. And I took the COVID test, and it just, like, instantly turned positive, and I'm like, oh, guess I'm not going into work, okay.
Yeah, and it's good that it responded right away. Like, it says wait a long time for it to go, and the first one that I took, I had to leave it overnight before it changed, and I was like, oh, wow, that changed so late, I might not have done it, but then I took another one, and it, like, immediately showed up, so I'm like, hey, now it's strong. It's getting stronger within me. Anyway, why don't you tell us about your twisted contest?
Yeah, so the first contest that I did for tonight's show, I did a pair of contests that are kind of opposing themes. But the first contest that I did for today is titled Twisted. So I was contemplating the idea of twisted and all of the different meanings it can have. A friend of mine randomly just said, don't get it twisted. And my brain just, like, grabbed that and went all kinds of different directions all at once. So I instantly, like, simultaneously pictured, like, a swing that gets all twisted up with the chains around and around. And then I pictured, like, a pretzel and then a braid and then a piece of rope and then like how it could mean things that are obscure, you know. So I just wanted to hear about other people's takes. Like, what do you think of when you hear the word twisted? Like, what comes to mind? I left a few tidbits of inspiration for this piece, just in case people wanted a little bit more of a prod. Again, you know, as always with my inspiration pieces, my little suggestions, you can use them or not use them to stay on topic, at least tangentially. I can piece together how you got there. So some of the inspiration that I left a picture of a tornado, a twister, if you will. I left a quote that says, I'm not this dark, twisted person. Yes, I have my demons, and this is my way of exercising them. It gets them out, and better out than in, from Naomi Watts. And then another quote, the more fucked up you are, the more I like you. As long as you've managed to hold on to your identity through all the shit, then it won't matter how twisted you are. I will love you more for it. By Ashley Lorenzana. And then an image of a bunch of twisted up words. Specifically, these words are like the user agreement for apps. they're just all twisted and warped so that you can not really read them or follow along. And then the fifth one was also a quote. Most people tend to think the best of those who are blessed with beauty, called imagining that physical perfection can conceal twisted emotions or a damaged mind.
And that was from Dean Koontz from Odd Thomas. And then the last quote was, "You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lines. You may trod me in the very dirt, but still, like dust, I'll rise." And that's from Maya Angelou. So that was the contest. One of the pair of contests. But we'll start off with that one.
Awesome. I really enjoyed it. The first image of the tornado just gives me, like, such an adrenaline rush because last weekend there was actually a tornado where I was camping. Thankfully, it was, like, in the distance. But we're at this, like, festival thing, and all of a sudden this sound goes off, and it's, like, a weird, like, I guess it's their storm warning system, but I'm not from there, so I was, like, not familiar with this noise, and I'm like, what do we do? And then someone was, like, just very casually, like, oh, it's fine, it's just part of the festival. So I was like, okay, so I just stupidly ignored it. And then later on, at night, it was so windy, and, like, the tents were blowing around, not mine, because it's super sturdy, but, like, it was just, like, crazy stormy, and, like, lightning everywhere. It was just, it was terrifying. And then some people were like, oh, yeah, did you see the funnel cloud? And I'm just like, the what now? And they're like, yeah, that's why the sirens were going off. I'm like, oh, we can't do that. So, yeah, that picture is just like, oh, that was my almost weekend. But now we have a poem by Robert J. Tice that is inspired by that image. Revolutionary Nature by Robert J. Tice. It spins and twirls, returns and swerves, but twisted it shall never be. This physics nature hinges on from hurricanes or spider webs, the whirlpool or the nautilus, the rattlesnake or artichoke, to DNA, the narwhal tusk, the dust devils with which pirouette, the pine cones, roses, galaxies, whatever spirals into life. No motive flow here, only cause, concentric ripples of effects, as logged along the cosmic scrolls of orbits, loops, what veers towards Earth, how stars preside, where waves unfurl, which wings find flight or currents curl, pure revolution of no mind to free, create, destroy, or bind. End poem.
Excellent read, Faziana. I really enjoyed this piece, Robert. You know, it's, to me, it speaks a bit of the golden ratio, you know, the math almost behind that spiral that is referenced so many times in here. You know, the physics nature hinges on that is found in so many of these things, hurricanes and spider webs and whirlpools and the Nautilus. You know, it's fascinating how many things that exact math shows up in. You know, so I love that even in the title it's tied up in, you know, revolutionary nature. You know, obviously the word revolutionary hinting at that twirl, that swirl. But also, you know, the idea of evolution and change and the way that works, you know. No motives flow here, only cause. Concentric ripples of effects as logged along the cosmic scrolls of orbits, loops, and what veers towards Earth. I love that it's taken outside of even just the nature that we're familiar with, which is what's in that first stanza. You know, the things we can see from here, you know, and takes it to something larger than that, the cosmic scrolls. You know, and that there is no motives, only cause, you know, that by chance. It makes me think of a genetics course I took in college where my professor told me that evolution works a lot like shooting a bicycle and expecting that bullet to make the bicycle better. And that's the odds of an evolutionary change being advantageous. And yet sometimes it happens. Which is just crazy, you know, talking about the odds of things working like that. And yet they do, and they do, and they do again. Because there's, I guess, so many evolutionary bullets. It was just weird to think of that. a little violent sounding in that context, but it just makes me think of that, you know, but the beauty of it, the beauty of chance, the beauty of probability, and yet it can't all be chance if it's all the same degrees and angles. There has to be something in physics that makes that optimized, you know, the optimal path. So I really love the beauty in this, you know, the pointing out of all those concentric things, but in an elegant and romantic way. Pure revolutions of no mind to free, create, destroy, or bind. You know, there's no intent, only effect, as are the laws of nature. So I really enjoyed this piece. I thought it was beautifully done. It was philosophical and elegant. Thank you, Robert J.T. Your thought, Kavaziana.
I agree. It has a philosophical edge to it, even though it's very scientific. And those are not two things I often put together, science and philosophy, as science tends to have more, like, definitive answers, and philosophy is more about, like, all the things that you don't know and so many things that are up in the air, and it's subjective. But they actually weave together quite nicely here. I really want to, like, well, I mean, I have no artistic skill, but if I was an artist, I would want to try to draw all the things in this. Like, it so inspires me to, like, think about all the different kinds of spirals and twistedness that you could fit into to art. With the something about the narwhal tusk just got me so excited of, like, the way that you could draw that. It's just, he really brings to life the variety of things that have such interesting shapes. And I like that it points out that, like, there's no motive. Like you said, it's pure revolution of no mind. And I like to put motives to everything. I mean, like, I feel like I personify things that don't need to be personified. You know, I yell at a book if it falls off the shelf. But I like the idea that, like, you know, it's not, like, out to get you. It's not, you know, nature is just its own thing, and it forms in these different ways, and it's just is beautiful and interesting. He also has quite a bit of alliteration in here. Witch wings, find flight, currents curl. I mean, that's all within one line. He has little pairs of words that just sound beautiful together. This is a really well thought out poem.
Yeah, I agree. It is very well thought out. I love all the little details of it. I love that you personify random things. I do the same thing all the time. Yeah, and it's not out to get you. Sometimes it feels like it's out to get you. So, excellent comment. What are we up to now?
Now we have one by Darkened Auras. But actually, we have two by Darkened Auras. So I just want to make sure which one I have as an audio, because I have an audio for one. That's straight and narrow. And that one. Okay. Yeah, we have two, and it's not this one that has the audio. So I just wanted to make sure I wasn't missing that audio. But I'm not. Okay. Here we go. Oh, now I'm... Yes. Okay. Pardon me. I just didn't want to miss it. Babbler, will you please read the one by Darkened Auras?
Absolutely. I'll click on it. Of course, I clicked the wrong button.
Nope, wait. I'm a fool.
Oh.
Okay.
Yes, there's a SoundCloud in the AM here.
There is a SoundCloud. So I'm going to start to play it, but we only have one SoundCloud, and it looks like there could have been two. So let's play this and see if it's the right one.
Revenge. The children would go down to the dock in order to point and laugh and mock. The bride whose groom had gotten away, leaving her to suffer, rot, decay. Now just a corpse of floating bones, she still cries out in haunting moans. Please find my love, bring him to me, help me to set myself free. A little girl one day came out, a willing vessel, calm and devout, who bid the spirit with both fists clenched to take her over and get revenge. She knew not why this child came, but possessed her all the same. Melting thoughts across her mind, to her betrothed they went to find. Anger and sadness the woman felt, from the child's cruel hand dealt. The woman's groom above mother slain, a screaming wail, full on insane. The next day a man's body found, half torso drug upon the ground, to a pool of blood down by the dock, with a frozen face in a state of shock. The girl's trauma couldn't be conserved, but the murderer got what he deserved. Now deep inside the woman's chest, in the skeletal grave, this child rests.
Thank you so much, Darkened Auras, for the SoundCloud. Always appreciated. It's so nice to hear people's poetry read in their own voices, and the way that they intended it to be read. We do our best, but, you know, it is a guess. Or an interpretation, perhaps, is a better way to phrase that. So thank you so much. This poem is so dark and, well, twisted, as per the theme. You know, and it took me a second, I think, to piece together the storyline, you know, talking about how children would go down to a dock to laugh at a woman whose groom had gotten away. But it sounds like she's dead in the lake. Like, you know, it's interesting to go and laugh and mock at, like, what sounds like a floating body. Like, those are some dark children. You know, now just the corpse of floating bones. She still cries out in haunting moans. You know, just kind of lamenting the loss of her husband. And then a little girl comes out, you know, a little girl one day came out, a willing vessel, calm and devout, who bid the spirit with both fins clenched to take her over and get revenge. So, like, this little girl comes down to the lake and says, like, go ahead and possess me so we can get your revenge. Like, what a twisted tale, you know? And then to have this possessed child hunt down would-be groom and murder him. I mean, not just murder him, but, like, only half his torso is drug upon the ground to a pool of blood down by the dock. Like, we're missing a whole lot of body. You know, so that this ghost can go to rest, you know. And then that last stanza, the girl's trauma couldn't be conserved, but the murderer got what he deserved. Now deep inside the woman's chest, in the skeletal grave, this child rests, you know. So the girl was utterly traumatized. And it almost sounds like didn't make it, you know, was basically killed, perhaps, in the possession, you know, in a skeletal grave, the child rests. But at least, you know, the poltergeist lady is also gone. So, interesting tale. Very harrowing, very twisted. I enjoyed it very much. It felt very, very like Tales from the Crypty. So, thank you, Darkened Auras. Tiziana, your thoughts?
Yeah, this one took me by surprise. It's terrifying. I know I kind of wondered at the beginning, too, the children were mocking. And at first I thought it was kind of like an old woman who just, because, like, you know, looked like skin and bones, like she was just so frail. But no, she's actually dead. And, like, they're mocking a skeleton? Like, that's horrible. And then she possesses the child. I mean, like, this feels like it needs to be a longer story, like a book or a TV show or something with, like, where it has chance to build up the history here, because it feels like there's a full story that, I mean, she manages to get it out in a short poem, but I feel like it needs to be expanded on. There's so many questions I have about what's going on, like, who is this girl, and how is she affected, and, like, what the man did to create this. Like, this just, it's so intense. It is deeply, deeply intense. And in the skeletal grave, the child rests. I also kind of wonder if it's metaphorical in some way, of it's like the way that people are as bystanders, kind of mocking someone's heartbreak, and then the girl who witnesses this has a kind of secondhand trauma and, like, you know, feels I can't quite process it, but this is a very intense rite, and I think Dark and Auras could expand on it and turn it into a full-fledged story.
Yeah, I definitely pictured it almost as like a TV special, you know. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with the Tales of the Crypt show that was, like, on in the 90s, I think, that told, like, dark horror stories. But it felt very something like along that vein, you know. It's very dark, very twisted. Excellent write, Dark and Auras. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I was always a bit of a wimp. My brother watched that, and I would, like, hide. I am somewhat familiar.
I had a neighbor who was 2 years older than me, and he would always come over and want to watch horror movies with me. I'm not, like, some big horror movie buff. I've never really cared. But I didn't hate them. I just didn't care. But he would bring them over, and then he would always, like, sit there and scream and cling to me and stuff. And it was funny. Because I'm like, why are you screaming? People all the time come out, is everything okay? And I'm like, I'm fine. He's been right watching by himself.
Well, you know, having someone there is nice. I certainly don't watch it by myself, but I don't watch it at all if I can help it. Yeah, I'm like, it's one thing I will not watch with my husband. I'm like, you have to go find a horror movie buddy. Like, you guys go watch the scary things. That's not for me. The next one is for prompt 3. The more fucked up you are, the more I like you. As long as you've managed to hold on to your identity through all this shit, then it won't matter how twisted you are. I will love you more for it. Ashley Lorenzana. Now, I didn't get myself together and write something this week, but if I had, I think this is the quote I would have picked. It's the one I connect with the most, I would say. I'm going to read the one by E.J. Cool. Salt. My spine is an open wound. The ice-caked, crumbling sidewalks of eroding urban streets. And you are the maddening smatterings of corrosive salt, searing bullet holes through the cumulative layers of my frozen flesh. And Paul.
Great read of Feziana. I really like this poem, you know. It's a brevity, but, you know, the idea of someone's spine being an open wound, like the rawness of that, and the tenderness of that, because your spine, you know, really holds your entire body at right. Excuse me, sorry. It's such a core, like, part of the structure of a human body. But to have it, like, open as an open wound, and I picture it, like, almost as lacerated and crumbling. Now, the ice-caked, crumbling sidewalks of eroding urban streets, just worn and abused and frozen. Like, you know, that's in really poor shape. And that leaves someone, like, really vulnerable. So in this, like, strong, gritty language about vulnerability. And I love the juxtaposition of that, you know, describing vulnerability in a way that has almost a hard edge to it versus a really soft language. And then to go on and say, you are the maddening smatterings of corrosive salt, searing bullet holes through the cumulative layers of my frozen flesh. So, like, this person is, they sting and they burn, you know, maddening smatterings. You know, salt on a wound is painful. It's a sting. It hurts, you know, and searing bullet holes through the cumulative layers of my frozen flesh. So just like going, cutting right through the remnants of an already fragile and crumbling spine. And yet thawing, you know, and thawing being kind of like a warming effect, being kind of like a making human again, despite the pain and the hurt. You know, there's so much goodness, like, wrapped in the bitterness and harsh language of this piece. I find it really interesting and a very textured write. Sorry, I just cough. Like I said, it comes out of nowhere and I have no warning and all of a sudden I'm just coughing. But, you know, and then put into the context of the quote, which is, you know, like, the more fucked up you are, the more I like you. It says, like, yeah, this is painful, but you're cutting, like, right to the core of me and thawing me as a human. So it sounds almost like rejection and vitriol, but I think it's actually more about acceptance and cohesion. So I actually really like the write. I find it very interestingly contradictory to itself, the language used versus the message conveyed. So excellent write, EJ. Your thoughts, Avisiana?
Well, I love what you said about how it has, like, the strong language to show vulnerability. I think you're right about that, and I didn't quite fully grasp that until you said it, and then I was like, that is what it is. So I love that. I really love the metaphors of the eroding street. And the thing about that salt that you put on the street is you do it so nobody falls. The idea is it's supposed to be protective. It's supposed to be a positive thing that we're not going to be falling on the ice. But in a way, by melting that ice, you're making it vulnerable. You're now exposing the street to things. And I feel like that it's like love is that, where it makes you open up, and there's a risk of falling. You know, when you're with someone who you love, you fall in love. They say fall for a reason, because, you know, you get kind of lost in it, and it is a vulnerable thing, and you can get hurt when you expose yourself in that way, when you are open, as the spine is here. I think that's an amazing thing, how she used the salt that is intended to be saving people, but actually ends up hurting the essence of what it's protecting in a way. It feels like a wonderful, wonderful metaphor that I'm really happy that got explored. And the idea of the cumulative layers of frozen flesh, it's sort of like the wall that we build around ourselves. And this person has managed to get through all of those walls, and now they feel like bullet holes because if someone gets through your walls and then they leave, then your walls are down and you're not protected from that. This is brilliant.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. The metaphors are beautifully done. And yeah, just that, the vulnerability of it, I think, is very well expressed and creatively expressed, too. Excellent comments, Viviana. Wonderful, right, EJ? Where are we off to?
All right, so now we're at that prompt that I can't even look at because it makes me dizzy. where the words are in a spiral. I mean, like, oh, I feel sick just looking at it. I'm sorry. So I'm going to get you to read this one because I can't even look at my page.
All right. Sing you, Mare. Ocean stare. Twist consciousness, picture, and then twisted it in the bonds of what station it haunts. Depth perceived of the reality it needs, holding sight in all its sports. Disclaimer comes in the places it shorts. For none can grasp the spoken dark, even in the entity of the spoken heart. Lash out distance to the sum of heart, leaving stations of life by the start to the willow fans, lifting sight in the designation of the advanced life to some in all its floor, giving out the designation of heaven's door, of what calm we could instill in me, different life in the sense of entity, fallen in the riddle of calm to stake, even if the twister is the life till break. No life holds random sense to cause, in the definition to the build we call the house, wherein we grasp out the daunt and fear, with the exception of the whoosh of rooftop in the event gone past. Life is pleasant, for all we know. In the middle of the heart, there is your soul, giving out sense for all to dear. In the heart I place my love that hold, wherein I steer to you to sense of my doom. The very open placement of the heart I flew from. Riddles to the calm out there. You are the one I look at, and twisted is the scene in mare. More. Constant in derision I call upon the flare. When my heart is settled, I love you more than the ocean stars. An endless stare, loving you, Mare, more, in borrowed word, German. Ocean stare, title, loving you, Mare. Simp, Gen Z slang, someone who does way too much for the person they have a crush on. In a lot of ways, the way that it's phrased and worded emulates the image. So the image is twisted and warped, and you can only make out these phrases that are kind of stopped and clipped. And the language in this piece works that way as well. You know, it's kind of this love poem that's written somewhat in, like, desperation, you know, in all of the ways that they love somebody, and they want, not even somebody, I think in some ways it's almost like about loving life, you know, and loving existence. I'm not sure that it's really targeted at a specific person so much as just the concept of just of loving to be alive, you know. You know, depth perceived of the reality it needs, holding sight in all its sports, like, so to be able to see, you know, all of these different things all at once to, like, different depths. You know, for none can grasp the spoken dark. Like, you don't know what you don't know. You can only see what you can see. And yet, you can still love those parts of life. You know, life to some in all its floor, giving out the designation of heaven's door. You know, even if it's twisted and complicated and you can't see everything all at once, you can still love the person that you know. And in some parts of this, it seems really desperate, you know, to love, you know, giving out sense for all to dear in my heart. I place my love, that hole wherein I steer, to you, to sense of my due, the very open placement of the heart I flew from, riddles to calm out there, you know, to want to come back to that place of love and calmness, like almost like when you get lost, you know, when things get twisted and complicated, to be able to come back to that place of love that you love more than the ocean, stars, and endless there. You know, and it could be a directed at a person, which, you know, is somewhat indicated at the end with the use of simp, you know, a simp being someone who is extremely affectionate and somewhat loud about it towards somebody. But to me, it almost seems like it's more like a love of life, or maybe even love, you know, almost like a religious kind of love as well. A little more generic than that, to really go out of your way to share love and spread love and find it for yourself. That's what this says to me. So, thank you, MSI, who wrote the dog to the right. Abiziana, your thoughts?
There are some really interesting choices, like stylistically, where certain words are in all caps, like life and hold and from and constant. And sometimes it really makes me think about the way that the sentence, like what it actually means, because the very open placement of the heart I flew from, it emphasizes the from, and usually I think of a heart you're flying to, like you're, when you love someone and you're going to that heart, but flying from that heart, running away from that love, they're emphasizing the from. A heart I place my love, that hold wherein I steer. So if you're trying to steer, then you're trying to move, but it's holding you in place. It's just the words that are emphasized really make me rethink my initial thought on some of the phrases. Where was the other one? Lashed out, distance to some apart. When I hear lashing out, I tend to think of that as like an anger thing, really. It's like, oh, he really lashed out after he was upset about that thing. But to lash out in love, it's just, I don't know, it's a very interesting way of doing it. It's how, sort of how for the last poem we're talking about, how it was very strong, like, fierce language to show vulnerability. I feel like this has a kind of dark fierceness to the language choices, even though it's seemingly about the more gentle thing of love. The sentence, life is pleasant for all we know, also makes me think, because it tends to be an expression like, for all we know, as in like, you know, despite our assumptions, it could be something totally different. Life is pleasant for all we know, because, you know, like maybe it seems unpleasant to us, but despite that, it is pleasant. We just don't know it. Like, it has this kind of like, I don't know, layered feel to it, where I wonder if there's like a slight sarcasm or something that's underneath it, or if I'm just projecting that. I'm not totally sure. The other strange thing, though, is that it links. So, like, when it says, for none can grasp the spoken dark, that's actually a link. And if you click on grasp the spoken dark, it brings you to another poem by the same poet, Letter to the Sail. And I'm curious about that choice of poem, because it's not the same wording, but it links you there. And I'm like, is it connected? And that poem is also from 2 days ago. So they're perhaps written as like a series. It's just interesting because it's very subtle. I almost didn't notice that. But as I read, I tend to highlight things because it helps me figure out what I'm going to talk about. And as soon as I put my mouse over it, I accidentally clicked on the link. So I was like, oh, that's a link to things. So very fascinating how it's all put together. Thank you, Ulu Don, for getting us thinking about that.
Yeah, I like your interpretation of it, too, you know, about it almost makes me think, you know, how I was saying, like, it almost seems like a desperate kind of love, you know, and then and to read it a little bit more and in the context where you did have the highlighted words, you know, especially those bold words, which are life, hold from constant, and on, it almost makes me think of, you know, and also the use of the word more in more than one language. You know, there's the word more in English a few times, but also mehr, which is borrowed in from German and means more, according to the context of this piece. And it almost makes me think of it as like confining, you know, and demanding, like more, more, more. I want more, you know, and kind of like this really kind of not maybe healthy love, like a twisted kind of love in that way. Like it's demanding. So I liked that observation. It helped me see it in a new context. Excellent comment.
I like that too, what you just said about the demanding love. I got that impression too.
Yeah.
our next poem is to the quote, "You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies. You may trod me in the very dirt, but still, like dust, I'll rise." I totally butchered that quote, by Maya Angelou. But thankfully, since I'm tripping over my words, G.A. Grimm has graced us with an audio, so I'm going to play that.
"So Go Ahead" by G.A. Grimm. "You used to get me all contorted, shaken up and feeling distorted. On the inside I have grown numb, so go ahead and call me dumb. It doesn't hurt like it used to, my mind you no longer see through. Calloused up so thick I can't feel your sharp tongue of wicked steel. Cutting me just because you can, making me small, less a man. Trying to steal away my pride, I've grown immune and dignified. You are powerful, no more. I am free and out the door. You have no love and can't be kind. A toxic thing I must leave behind. So go ahead, let loose your screams. A pile of shit, I see its theme. Your words, the weight of a feather. Fuck you and being together."
Well, thank you, D.A. Grimm. Again, so much for the audio clip. It's wonderful to hear your voice. I'm not sure that I've heard his voice before, but I enjoyed it very much. It's, at least in my area, an accent that I don't hear very often, but I do very much enjoy. So, thank you. I also really enjoyed the piece, you know. "You used to get me all contorted, shaken up and feeling distorted. On the inside, I've grown so numb, so go ahead and call me dumb." You know, the heart is hardened. You know, the love is lost. You know, only so much abuse can be tolerated. And in this case, you know, that abuse leading to someone becoming more hardened and more stalwart and more strengthened. And instead of being torn down, it doesn't really sound like they've been torn down. It's just they've fallen at more and more out of love with this person to the point where they just don't even give a shit, which, if you ask me, it's the better of the two options. You know, don't let it erode your own self-worth. But by all means, it can erode your opinion of the person. I particularly like that next stanza. "It doesn't hurt like it used to. My mind you no longer see through. Calloused up so thick, I can't feel your sharp tongue of wicked steel." You know, the tongue lashing isn't even a lashing anymore, because it's happened so many times that they're basically a callous, you know, a calloused heart, essentially, and a calloused mind. And this person isn't even aware of the fact they don't know what you're thinking anymore, and they don't know what you're feeling anymore, and they think they're hurting you, but they're really not. Like, it's just, you know, okay, whatever, another tongue lashing, bring it. You know, because that's what happens. You know, you get blisters so many times and then you get a callus. So particularly enjoyed the word callus there, I think. Calloused up so thick I can't feel that idea of like a calloused heart or emotional or mental wall. You know, and it goes through that kind of thought here for the next two stanzas. You know, that Celeste was like, you know, I'm sick of this shit. Like, I'm sick of being yelled at and told that I'm supposed to feel small, that I'm supposed to feel like less of a man, that I'm not supposed to have any more pride. But that's not what happened, you know. You get to that last stanza that's like, so go ahead and let loose your screams, the pile of shit. I see it seems your words the weight of a feather. Fuck you. And being together, you know, done, you know, calling it, like, it doesn't even matter anymore, like, the, you know, just seeing them as, like, you're just spewing bullshit, and it doesn't hurt me at all, it's the weight of a feather, like, not even a straw on the back, like, it's just, it's over. So I really like this, you know, and I like the response, too, that it's not, it's about inner strength, really, and about not taking this anymore. And I loved that it's not about losing that self-confidence, about actually feeling small, about actually being torn down. You know, the person thinks they're tearing down, but they don't have nearly the effect on you that they think you do. They do. So I really enjoyed the write. I thought it was a great interpretation of the quote. And a great spin on it. So thank you, G.A. Graham. Your thoughts to Stacey on it.
Yeah, I felt myself, like, cheering him on. It was like, yeah, you leave that person. I don't know. I was totally on his side. And I know it's his perspective that I'm hearing, but it sounds like an abusive, toxic relationship. And I'm happy when people realize that and step away. I liked the callous part that you were pointing out, Babbler, callous up so I can't feel. And the nice part about the callous is that, as nice part of the callous, things you never knew you'd say, is because it's not, even though it's an uncomfortable feeling to have a callous, and, you know, it's not always, like, the positive thing, it's not like a wound that goes deep. It's something that has built up and does end up protecting you. And it's like, as much as this person thought they got, you know, under his skin, they actually just gave him thicker skin, and he's able to handle it now. But he shouldn't have to. And I like that he recognizes that now he's strong enough that it doesn't hurt him, but he still doesn't have to put up with it. Like, just because you're strong enough to take it doesn't mean you have to. I liked that. I liked the section that said, trying to steal away my pride, I've grown immune and dignified. And I think dignified is a really important part there. And it wasn't just chosen because it rhymes with pride. I think dignified is really a strong section. When you've been put down by a partner and you're made to feel small and just, like, treated poorly, leaving them is about recapturing the feeling of, like, what you deserve. And I feel like he really captured that here. And then the last two lines just made me smile. Your words, the weight of a feather, fuck you, and being together. There's kind of a levity to that, which is great because, you know, feathers are light. But it just has this kind of snippiness to it. You know, I don't put a lot of swears in poems, but I think this was one of those moments where it just worked really well, and I'm happy that he did. And I loved having the audio, because I've had quite a few entries from G.A. Graham, but I don't think I've heard his voice either, and it's really nice to get an audio.
Yeah, agreed on the audio.
you know, it just occurred to me in listening to you talk about the word calloused, too, that the other thing I liked about the choice of calloused is that it's not a scar. It will slough off, and it will be just like it was before. Like, it's not permanent damage. It's just a protective layer as needed. I think the word calloused here, at least for me, is a really key piece of this poem. So, excellent, right? I really enjoyed it.
I kind of want to have a callous-themed contest now. I think a lot could come out of that.
Yeah,
I mean, as long as people are taking it metaphorically. I mean, it could also be kind of icky, but...
I don't mind icky. Gross me out. Yeah. I dare you.
That's true. All right. Free pedicure for the person who gets us thinking about calluses. Okay.
Free pedicure if you actually manage to gross me out. That's a challenge.
Yes. Yeah. Or you could just give me one, you know. See how it goes. I'm now entering that voice contest that I said that we were doing. Okay. this poem is to the same prompt by Daniel Descino, Crooked Path to Reach the Sun. I was born, or so I was told. I only remember purity and peace, the world a field, and I, a lone oak tree sapling, bathing in the sun and dancing with the grass. The forest walked onto the horizon, so beautiful they seemed, so enticing, a whole world beyond that called for adventure. But I didn't need to move. It came to me. The grass grew taller, the forest marched closer, and it seemed one morning, I'm not sure how it happened so fast, but the field was gone, and it was all forest, and me. And as I grew, my branches twisted and bent to look for the sunlight, and vines grew to entangle me. All around, animals came to profit from my serene nature. Some climbed all over me with no respect. Others buried deep inside to feast from my flesh and blood. I missed the days of the open meadow and the twists and bends, the invasive flora and fauna. They are now who I am. End poem.
Excellent read, Ephesia. Interesting write, Daniel. I love the opening. Just, I was born, or so I was told. You know, nobody remembers actually being born. We're all basically just told we're born. And you start to believe that story the older you get, because you see other people be born, and you're like, oh, that's how it works. But this is interesting, because it's almost like a fable. You know, you start with that line, I was born, or so I was told. And you assume that the narrator is human, but then it becomes evident that it's something else. You know, I only remember purity, peace, the world of field, and I, a lone oak tree sapling, bathing in the sun and dancing with the grass. So it's just a little oak tree. And then that makes me think of, like, what is the definition of born? You know, I don't think too many people would consider plants born. But really, why not? You know, it's a germinated seed. Is that really much more different than a fertilized egg? Is born something that really only applies to, like, things that gestate internally? You know, like, are reptiles not born because they come from eggs? Like, are chickens not? Anyway, weird thoughts, because playing with definitions of born. You know, but so it's an oak tree sapling that's kind of dancing in the sun, in this open field, and watching life kind of happen around. And then life shows up on its doorstep. And it seemed interesting at first, you know, the whole world beyond that called for an adventure. You know, to have that adventure come to you and to experience the adventure. And then find out it's not all really that it shocked up to be. You know, as I grew, my branches twisted and bent to look for the sunlight, and vines grew to entangle me. It was challenging, you know. It wasn't like, oh, yay, I'm part of the forest. I'm being smothered.
you know, and life is hard now. I don't just get to grow openly in a field. There's competition, you know, and all around animals came to profit from my serene nature. Some climbed all over me with no respect. Others buried deep inside to feast from my flesh and blood, you know, like wood-boring beetles and, like, squirrels and, you know, all kinds of animal nonsense from the perspective of an oak tree, you know, to then miss the days of the open meadow, which is really not dissimilar from just growing up in general. You know, you don't have to be a mythical oak tree on this fantastical plane. I think it describes a lot of childhood, you know, to have life fairly easy because you're sheltered ways by your family and by the things that it takes to get by in life, hopefully. You know, I had a little bit of a rough start, but even I, you know, wasn't out working the field when I was a toddler, so. You know, to see adulthood and to see those kinds of things and think of them, I was like, oh, I can't wait to grow up. You know, you've heard so many kids say it. You know, when I'm an adult, I'm going to blah, blah, blah. And then you get there and it's not what you thought it was. You know, like, yeah, okay, you have your own money, but you had to, like, bust your ass to get it, and now everyone's got their hand out. So it's fascinating. I feel like it's an allegory for growing up and discovering the difficulties of life and to yearn for the ease of youth, you know, miss the days of the open meadow. And the twists and bends of the invasive flora and fauna, they are now who I am. And I picture it almost as like losing that innocence and becoming a bit of a bitter adult, you know, a jaded person who's experienced and seen more of the world and know that sunshine and meadows. So I really enjoyed the write. I thought it was a beautiful piece, and I thought it was a great extended metaphor. So thank you, Daniel. Your thoughts, Faisiana?
I completely agreed about it being an allegory. I felt like when the forest is suddenly there, it is that moment of like, oh shit, I'm an adult now and I have all of these responsibilities. It's like you thought that was way off in the distance and then there it is. You didn't even get to have the adventure to go get it. It's just suddenly there. And then when he talks about, where is it? To profit from my serene nature, some climbed all over me with no respect. And to me, Daniel has always seemed like a very kind of sweet, gentle man. And I could see people taking advantage of that, you know, in business, in personal matters, like just kind of like using him and making things more difficult than they had to be. So the idea that like he was expecting this being a part of the forest to be a beautiful thing, but then he got trampled. And that's just sad, but I feel like it's definitely metaphorical there, if not for him personally, then for society. And especially there at the end, the twists and bends, the invasive flora and fauna, they are now who I am. And that's the thing, is like once you're in that society, once you are in the world that acts that way, you kind of become it in order to survive. I've been like binge watching old reruns of the show The Practice, which is a lawyer show from like the 90s, and I was too young at the time it was on to watch it, so but now I'm watching it on Disney Plus. And the thing is, all of them throughout the 7 seasons are getting like more and more corrupted, and they started off as like these like, we're just gonna like save the innocent people, and then they get you know, dragged down by it, and eventually they're doing the things that they were, you know, criticizing other people for doing in the beginning, just trying to win. And they're like, we've become the part of what we're, of what's the kind of the forest that they're in. They've now become one of those trees. And that last stanza just made me think about that, how you kind of become what you're surrounded by. And the unfortunate nature of that. So I thought this was a wonderful allegory and great poem. And then I see at the bottom it links, so he entered your other contest that we're going to do the second half of the show, and it's a companion piece. So even though we're mostly going to do that that contest afterwards, I think we should perhaps read his companion piece right away so they go together. What do you think, Babbler?
That's fine. Yeah. Sorry, I was in a coughing fit. I didn't want to unmute right away. What do you think?
That's all right. Nice. I see Luke on the board. Hello, Luke. Babbler, are you still coughing up, or do you feel like you can read the companion piece?
Oh, no, I can do it. They just kind of come and go. So, like I said, it's very sudden. I'll be fine, and all of a sudden, cough. Which sounds like coughing, like, you know, being buried, but that's not what I mean. Anyway, yeah, I can give this read. This is Straight and Free with Memory by Daniel Dischino. I'm human, so I am told. I'm not sure what human is. All I know is how I feel, rigid, old and stiff, firmly planted into the life I have made. I breathe the air, I bathe in the sunshine, and I nourish from what the earth provides. Is that why I feel peace and comfort around the trees? There must be a way back to what I can't remember, but I know there was something, so much effort to move, so much risk to stretch out my hands. And standing up, why did I never think of that before? I understand movement now, and I am so tall. I can see over the forest. There are other places in the world. There are other places. I don't walk. I don't crawl. But I instantly run in a straight, determined line. Everything in my way, I remove with elated force with my newly discovered arms. There's something in the distance, and with no thought of time, it comes near. A field. I remember now. And because I remember, I am there, open and free, soft grass, bright sunlight, arms and legs straight and strong, stretched and radiant, my body like a star to those that dare look. And the forest, I'm not sure if it ever existed. End quote. I found a very interesting companion piece. I love that the two lines in the beginning changed. You know, the first two lines being like, I was born, or so I'm told. This one is, I am human, or so I'm told, which I think is interesting considering my interpretation of the born and the places that that line took me mentally. You know, what is it to be born? Now it's, what is it to be human? You know, I'm not sure what human is. And then they describe themselves as rigid and old and stiff and firmly planted, just bogged down and rusty almost, like very settled and almost like devoid of life, but not quite. You know, it's more like inflexible. You know, I'm not sure if I'm describing it the way I mean it, but, you know, to not be looking at all the things that life could be, but just to be kind of in your little dour pocket of existence, to be subsisting. And then it goes into remembering, you know, that there was something better than this at one point. You know, at one point that life was better than this. And then to slowly make efforts to get there. You know, so much effort to move. So much risk to stretch out my hands, you know, to be atrophied in that way. You know, it makes me think of, Newton's law as it applies to human beings, you know, things that are at rest are, will stay at rest. And I think of that a lot when it comes to people, you know, people who are athletic and limber are more likely to stay athletic and limber. And people who are sedentary and stiff are likely to stay sedentary and stiff.
snatch every once in a while to buck those rules. You know, and standing up, why did I never think of that before? You know, to change and grow after being stagnant for what seems like a really long period of time. And then to rediscover freedom through making those steps to go from just standing and stretching and then exploring and then running in a straight determined line towards an easier, breezier style of life. I really liked to the my body like a star, you know, to those that dare that look, after describing themselves as arms and legs straight and strong, stretched and radiant. And if you're laying out in the middle of the field like that, with your arms and legs straight out, you're kind of a star shape, you know, two legs, two arms, and a head. But also the, like, the radiant feeling, the brightness of it, you know, to, like, burn somebody's eyes. But it also makes me think, as a really pale person, if you're stark naked, you know, how blinding that can be when you're out in bright sunlight. You're like, whoa, that's really white. just something that hasn't seen sunlight in a long time. Just a thought. You know, and then the forest, I'm not sure if it ever existed, to just almost forget what that shackled, closed-minded feeling was almost like. And I like that it applies to so many different things. You know, it's like almost like rediscovering youth, but in a lot of ways it's rediscovering joy, or even like rethinking lines of thought, you know, discovering new ways to be free and to lose things that seemed ingrained. So I really liked this, and I thought it worked really well as a companion piece to the other rite. So thank you, Daniel. Your thoughts to phasing up.
I really love this. Like you, I liked it at the beginning where it had the "so I am told" in the second line matching the other one. When it's talking in the second stanza about being rigid and stiff and firmly planted with roots, it has that tree imagery, which works nicely because the last one, he was a tree that was like a human, and now he's a human who is like a tree. So it works really nicely as a companion. And then there's that feeling of peace around the trees that I think I definitely relate to. But then when it's talking about, where is it? And standing up, why didn't I never think of that before? It makes me think about how in the first poem he was saying what I interpreted as people like using him as a doormat kind of thing, where it's like everyone was taking advantage of him and they're just crawling all over, and like all the animals and other plants and things were just like, you know, giving him no space. And now he's like, why didn't I think about standing up for myself? I can do that. And realizing that you can change your situation. I liked that, where is it? My newly discovered arms. And I think in a way that's sort of like realizing that you can do things, that you can make changes in your own life, that you have more control than you may have thought. Then at the end, when he's out in the field, it, like you said, it's like he's rediscovering youth, he's rediscovering joy. At the end, when it talks about the body like a star, I think you're right. It's like that being like kind of spread out, laying on the ground. And I actually did that last weekend. I was so exhausted because we were kind of entertainers throughout the festival. And then when the public leaves at 6 o'clock, I just kind of like flop down in the field. And I'm just like looking at the clouds and like just like kind of in, I don't know, being one with nature. And people like thought I like passed out. And I'm like, no, this is just what I need. I'm just going to just look at the clouds and relax. The forest, I'm not sure if it even ever existed. I think it's a powerful thing because in this context, I think he's actually talking about like the city. When he says the forest, he means the busy kind of modern life, the adulthood weights and pressures, just based on how he described the forest in the first poem. I don't think of it as actually being about nature. The forest is the thing that's the opposite of the forest, really. And when you get away from it enough, you can pretend it never even existed in that moment. And that's why I love going into the literal forest, because you can kind of pretend that the rest of the world doesn't exist. So I don't know, I really connected with this poem. I think out of the two, this one was my favorite, but I really enjoyed both of them together.
I think the other one, for me, I liked just a little bit better, but I liked them both. And I think they work really well together. So I'm glad you have us reading both back to back. They add something to each other when you see them next to each other. So thank you, Daniel. Where are we off to now, Faziana?
Now we have one by Paul. So this is Back to Your First Contest, a twisted one. It's called Untied Shoelaces, and it's by Paul Thomas One. Twisted the path to which some born, linear the thought with which to navigate, knowledge expected, but parental guardians not always in possession, learning the alternative if self-motivation valued, decades circling, contemptuous opportunities, seasons more discovering, deserts have been walked. Any human encountered could have set us straight, if truly compassionate. Puppeteers in heaven, servants in hell, knocked on the former, been rejected by the later, since the umbilical cord, life an eternal twist, acquired wisdom's resident as arthritis challenges. By the time mind straight, body seeking crooked, oh, so humorous, if not for cynicism. Laugh, you fool. Your turn starting tomorrow. And Paul.
Great read, Faziana. An enjoyable write, Palmer. My turn does not start tomorrow. I think I'm like a good couple decades into this, at least. You know, twisted the path to which some born, linear the thought to which, with which to navigate. Knowledge expected, but parental guardians not always in possession. You know, not everyone's born in the best circumstances, you know, but everyone's kind of expected to follow the same path. Everyone's expected to follow the same rules and do the same things and behave in the same way, but we don't all come from the same place. They expect you, they being society, they being like the educational system, they just, you know, the general rules of life, essentially. You're just expected to know how to do a lot of things. But if your parents are shitty, you're not equipped with the same tools as other people to do those things. You know, learning the alternative is self-motivation value, you know. You can learn it for yourself. It's not as easy as having someone teach you, you know, someone who had kind of a difficult childhood. And I will say, one thing I've always enjoyed about myself, at least, is that I seem able to learn from other people's mistakes. Not everyone is. There's some people who have to learn by experiencing, like some of my siblings. That can be really hard to watch. But, you know, that's what it's saying to me, you know, is everyone's expected to follow these same rules in life and expected to know how to do that when we're not all handed an instruction manual or people who give a damn. Decades circling contemptuous opportunities, seasons more discovering deserts have been walked. Any human encounter could have set us straight if truly compassionate. So you're struggling and you're finding that you've wasted all this time needlessly, you know, taking the long way to things, learning everything the hard way. And nobody
helping you. Nobody pointing you in the right direction, even though, like, a simple word really could have helped. You know, someone stepping in being like, oh, no, like, here, this is how you do it. But nobody does those things. You're more like, you know, people might observe that and then go tell their friends about it or talk about it, but there's not a whole lot of people out there who will step in and show you how to do things. I will also say, though, that just as often, if you do want to step in and teach people how to do things, there's a lot of skepticism kind of lobbed at you because people are used to being taken advantage of. So then when you come in and you're just like, here, let me show you how to do this, you get a raised eyebrow. Like, what are you getting out of this? Because that's the unfortunate of being jaded. Puppeteers in heaven, servants in hell, knocked on the former, been rejected by the latter, since the umbilical cord, life, an eternal twist. You know, the people in heaven just using you, you know, that are just, you know, hey, you're going to do what I say. Like, yeah, we'll help you out, and then you'll just be our puppet. And then people in hell, you know, just being like, yeah, I'll help you for what, you know. And to have experienced both, and neither being great, you know. But since the umbilical cord, life and eternal twist, you know, so since being born, things have been complicated and indirect. And then the last to me are about, like, looking back on this, you know, now I'm getting old. I have arthritis challenges, you know. By the time the mind's straight, body's seeking crooked, you know, so by the time you figure things out and you realize how life works and what's important and what's not important and what's a waste of time and what's worth doing, your body is not as cooperative as it once was, you know. And I'm starting to get into this in a way. You know, I think about the energy that I had when I was 20. And the things I could do that I was 20, that I wish I'd done, that I didn't do, that I'd love to do now, but I'm not as able to do. You know, since I'm falling off a cliff, and right now I've got, like, a torn ACL, and never mind the fatigue of COVID. That part will go away, but, you know, the body is not as willing as it once was. And that's just how it goes, right? That's why they say that the youth is wasted on the young. Because, you know, when you're able to do it, you don't know what to do with it. And then once you know what to do with it, you don't have it anymore. And then that last two lines, the last couple, last you fool, your turn starting tomorrow. Like, you know, you're laughing at the old man. He seems frustrated and tired, but that's going to be you soon enough. So I really like it. There's dry humor to this piece in here as well that I really enjoyed. I thought it was a great write from Paul Thomas. Thank you. Your thoughts,
Daisy. I love your comments, Babbler. I think that you touched on the most important part here about how that the, you know, people expect everyone to have certain knowledge and to have certain kind of manners and common sense, and you know, the fact that it's considered common sense is like everyone should have it. But unfortunately, if we don't have role models, we don't get that. And there are quite a few people who don't have someone to show them those kind of basics of being in society, of interacting. And it's just, it's really sad that, you know, not all kids have guardians who will teach them, or even by example, show them how to be and how to do the things that come just naturally to other people, because that's just how their parents were. It's definitely a struggle, and you see the divide between classes, the divide between, like, the rich and the poor grow and grow as, you know, people don't have opportunities because they don't fit what people might be looking for education, for employment, for social things, because they haven't had that kind of informal education at home, that of how to interact and how to be, which is really sad. It's definitely been a bigger gap the last couple of years. I'm on the early years council for my city, and I didn't do it, but there were people who did an assessment of kids coming into kindergarten, and it's just like really simple test. It's not like a school test, but it's like just a casual conversation with them, give them some toys to play with and stuff, and like the kids this year, there was a huge difference between the kids compared to, usually they're all around the same level, and now it was some kids are like, they have no idea how to speak to another person, how to, like, they're four, and they don't talk, they're afraid to be near anyone, they can't do a lot of the things that normally they would have learned out in the world because they've been isolated. It just amplifies it because of, you know, all the COVID stuff, but there's always been gaps between families, and it's really touched on here. So anyway, I think he does it in a really intelligent way, and you've articulated that really nicely, so I'll shut up on the manner. But the other thing that I really liked about here was where he's talking about the body getting too old. So as soon as the mind's not crooked, the body is. And it reminded me of in the movie 10 Things I Hate About You, which is one of my favorites. It's I was going to say contemporary. It's not contemporary anymore. It's from 1999, but it was a more contemporary version of The Taming of the Shrew, Shakespeare play. And Mr. Stratford, who is the dad in it, says, "You're 18. You don't know what you want, and you won't know what you want till you're 45. And even if you get it, you'll be too old to use it." And he's yelling at the kids when he says that. But it's just, it's so true. I hate that he's right. That's all I could think about when I read that part. And I kind of like looked it up while you were talking. I'm like, I'm pretty sure Mr. Stratford said something like that. And he did. So yes, Paul Thomas, you are wise. As much as I don't want you to be right, you are.
Yeah. Thoughts. I love it when I have a thought and I'm about to articulate it and then it flies right out of my head and I had no idea what I was about to say. Have one of those lovely moments. But yeah, the idea that, you know, by the time that you know what you want, like, you can't do it anymore. It's so true sometimes. And it's just like, the older you get, you realize the more true that is. And yet, there's nothing anyone could have ever said to me in my late teens and early 20s that would have made me behave any differently than I did. So, like, I could get in a time machine right now and go back and find myself and be like, hey, you should do that thing, the thing you really want to do. Like, you should totally do it. Just do it. Do it now. And I don't think I would even change my own mind, you know? So it's one of those things, the stubbornness of youth. You know nothing, but you think you know everything. So anyway, great, right? I really enjoyed it. Comments. Now, Louisiana.
We have one by Myriad Dark. Would you read that one, please?
Absolutely. This is A Tale in the Telling. There's an epic tale in each line, behind the windows of each soul. Actually, before I get into this, I should mention that I think this is for the other contest. So this is into the Straight and Narrow contest. Anyway, starting. A Tale in the Telling. There's an epic tale in each line, behind the windows of each soul, a telling saga in each rhyme and reason, each journey taken, laid out, and bold. If you listen closely, you'll hear the echoes, because such journeys are never in vain, when each of us come back home again. The world can be as wide as the universe when viewed through a single pair of eyes, when we cross those lines drawn in the sand, taking on the insurmountable odds that keep us tied. So watch me rise up to the challenge. I'll fight any cause just for you, if that's what you want me to do. There are dreams and there are moments. Sometimes there are not the words to describe. I can put my foot in my mouth without trying, even when I'm trying so hard not to fall down again. It's a tale worthy of any telling, I believe. Even if it is just dust in the wind to some, I belong to you, whatever may come. So you can read the story in my eyes. It's in the lines and hidden meanings there. It tells the journey and roads I have traveled from the highest heights to the depths of despair. If you listen closely, you'll hear the echoes, ghostly murmurs that are blown in the wind as each of us come home again. End poem. I thought this was really pretty. It almost sounds like a love letter in a way, but it's written more generally than that. But it's addressing the reader in an almost kind of formal way. You know, there's an epic tale in each line, but behind the windows of each soul, a telling saga in each rhyme and reason, each journey taken, laid out in bold. Everyone has their own story. Everyone is writing their own story. And if you pay attention to everybody, everybody's life has a purpose, because such journeys are never in vain. You know, so everyone's life has a purpose. And it's a story written from beginning to end. And all of the different trials and tribulations that life goes through for everyone, they can all look differently. You know, everyone has different challenges. Everyone has different battles, different goals, different things that they want, different places that they're going. No two lives are exactly the same. You know, there's different times and places and people and feelings. And all of them are worthy. Everyone is worth hearing. Everyone is worth exploring. There's no unworthy life. And so I feel like that's really at the crux of this piece, you know, is appreciating all of the different paths that life takes and all of the different challenges that people face. I like the concept of viewing them all as their own sagas. You know, everyone is a mini Iliad in the making. And then it says, if you listen closely, you'll hear the echoes, ghostly murmurs that are blown in the wind as each of us come home again, which to me, I think has a little bit of a religious nod to it, but it can also be more vague than that, you know, just the where you come from before you're alive and then returning that, you know, earth to earth, you know, dust to dust, you know, to come from, you know, the existence of the world and to go back into it, you know, like almost like a bubbling up of consciousness. Anyway, I really enjoyed the write. I thought it was beautifully done and it has a lovely message. And it feels almost like an open letter. Very romantic. There's a very romantic slant on this piece from Marriott Dark. I enjoyed it very much. Your thoughts, Faziana?
I enjoyed it as well. I like the idea of thinking about all the different perspectives and how each perspective has so much potential. I mean, the world can be as wide as the universe when viewed through a single pair of eyes. So when you think about that and how many pairs of eyes there are and how many different perspectives, I mean, like, it's amazing. So when we cross those lines drawn in the sand, taking on the insurmountable odds that keep us tied, imagine how all of those different perspectives and all of those people who have their own story having interactions with each other and how it all plays out. It's just incredible. It's sometimes baffling to think about how many people are experiencing, like, life at the same time, and just, like, that your own little world is only the tiniest little view of how things are. This really just makes you think about that. And it was, like, relaxing to listen to, even though it's, like, so grand. The end of it, as each of us comes home again, and also in the way that you said it, Babbler, I don't know, I felt like that was, like, at the end of, like, I was going to say when you do yoga, which I don't do very often, so it's not a good example for me, but, like, there's that, like, calming, like, you take your deep breath, and you let it go, and when each of us come home again, I had this kind of, like, exhale feeling of just, like, relaxing and being centered. So I felt like this was almost mystical in its ability to just, like, calm me down. So it was very nice, Myriad Dark.
I liked it. Yeah, it's almost like a lengthened version of Namaste. You know, I see you. Like, the spirit in me sees the spirit in you. And it's kind of what the poem says, too. So I like that. Excellent comment. Where are we off to now?
Now I'm going to read one by Ken Dahl. And this is for the second contest. Thanks for catching that last time. We had two different Pauls enter something. So because we had just done one by Paul, I went to the one after Paul. But I went to the wrong Paul, so so I jumped ahead to the second contest. But we are now in the second contest. Sundress Smiles by Ken Dahl. All her curves come to the most beautiful end. Got me doing to... I'm going to start over because I'm tripping on myself. Sundress Smiles. All her curves come to the most beautiful end. Got me going to bed daydreaming, I'm sleeping in. Her crooked smile's just another curve that sets everything straight. Easy on the eyes, her language of love, I want to translate. When she bites her lip, I know she's ready to negotiate. While she can, my name, any price on the real estate. I'm debating my time for volunteering, watching her curve past alluring. End poem.
Nice read. And I really like this piece. There's such a humor to it, and yet a smoothness. It almost feels suave, like an extended pickup line, you know? Especially the when she bites her lip, I know she's ready to negotiate. Well, she can name any price on the real estate. You know, her, like, referring to her body as the real estate, you know. I'm debating my time for volunteering, watching her curve past alluring, you know, like, you know, like, what can I offer here to get me a piece of this real estate? It's flirty and fun, and yet, you know, it's obviously suggestive, but, I like the idea that her curves set everything straight, you know, and her crooked smiles being something that's appreciated, you know. It's definitely romantic, but it's like wryly romantic with humor in it, you know, to just be so attracted to somebody and find them so attractive. I also like the play on all the curves setting things straight. You know, like, to both be curvy and straight, as kind of the tie-in to the theme on this piece. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun little brevity. I think it says quite a bit for eight little lines. So thank you, Kendall, for the write. It was a nice change in mood. Your thoughts, Daisyana?
It is. It's a light kind of feeling compared to some of our more serious poems tonight. And I enjoy that too, how the curves setting things straight, the curves making him feel very straight. I think that's fun. For me, it's the opposite. The curves are making me not as straight. back into the more twisted side, not so much the straight. I think this is fun, you know, usually I don't like the objectification of people, but the real estate thing was pretty funny, so, he got me. This was really fun. Thank you, Kendall.
Yeah, I agree with you about the objectification, but the way that it's done, it works without being offensive. And I think it works, too, because there are tie-ins to things that are not necessarily physical. You know, if it's not been paired right before that with her crooked smile and the look in her eyes, I think I'd be like, okay. You know, but because it's also her running the show, you know, she's biting her lip and looking over at him like, hey, you know.
yes.
You know, she's negotiating this deal. So,
I agree
with you. Normally, the objectification is a little off-putting, but I think it's just the right amount here to push that line. So, thank you, Kendall. Where are we off to?
Now we have one by Paul Brott. This is the other Paul that I was accidentally looking at. and based on the picture, I think it's going to be a little sexy, too. So why don't we get you to read that, Babbler?
No problem. This is Watch Your Step by Paul Brott. She had many mountains. She had forged many streams. She had followed many rivers. She finally found her dream. She measured all her options. She'll adjust to all of that. Pleasurable proportions. Her last one, a vagabond sap. He treated her like his sweet señorita. Previous lovers, malnourished mosquitoes. She wished to go straight, no longer corrupt. She wanted a life that was on its way up. She's ready to consummate. I can do it, I swear. Kaboom! Then she stumbled, having missed the last stair. Sorry. This is really interesting because it's, you know, all of the different things to get to this place. All the mountains and streams and rivers to finally find your dream, you know, your dream life, your dream man, you know, et cetera. And to weigh all of these things out and settle on a vagabond sap, which I found really interesting because it was like not an appealing combination in my mind. And yet I picture this kind of silly man in a fluffy shirt is kind of what my mind conveys. Like, I'm dating myself a little bit here, but I think of Seinfeld, the pirate shirt episode. like vagabond sap. You know, but he treats her well. You know, sweet señorita, making previous lovers malnourished mosquitoes, which I think that's the first real injection of humor into this piece, where you get a little bit of a flavor to it that it's a little jokey, you know, in a good way, tastefully jokey. You know, wished to go straight, no longer corrupt. She wanted a life that was on its way up. So she's done shopping. You know, she's settled on her partner here. And she's ready to go to bed. She's ready to make this happen. And then she eats it on the staircase. So I don't know how serious of a piece this is, you know. Is it like she falls over and they laugh about it? Or is it like she's dead on the stairs? Like, did she crack her neck? Like, is this it? She found like the love of her life and too little too late kind of a thing? That gives it a real dark spin. Or is it one of those things that you laugh about? You know, you're trying to walk up with the staircase all, like, sexy, like, look how gorgeous I am, don't you want me? And then you eat it and look like a dip. And I'm not really sure, because it just ends there, entertaining in itself, because I don't know. Like, is she dead? Is this a story about taking too long to make a decision? You know, of finding the right thing at the wrong time? You know, or is it a more lighthearted piece about, you know, a comedic misstep when you're trying to take yourself seriously? And quite honestly, it both could be and is both. So, I enjoy the duality of the piece. I would love to know Paul Brott's take on it, and then the intention. Did he mean both? Did he mean one? Did he mean the other? Anyway, overall, I really enjoyed the write. I thought it was entertaining. I enjoyed the injections of humor. And I even enjoyed the ambiguity at the end. So thank you, Paul. Your thought to see the honor.
Okay, I'm really weird, but I saw it as, like, a metaphorical fall of, like, she, the last stare was, like, the almost making the right choice. Like, she was about to get married, and then, you know, she cheated on him at the bachelorette party or something like that. I don't know why that's where my mind went, but it was, like, because she wanted to, like, be good and no longer be corrupt, and she was going to be with this nice guy, even if he was kind of, you know, not what she was used to, and she was going to be good, and then she wasn't good, and she fell off the wagon kind of thing. I don't know. But then as soon as you're talking, I'm like, yeah, what you said makes sense. But for me, she was just, like, actually just going bad again.
Well, I don't know. That makes sense to me, too. It's a third interpretation, but there is that line, you know, where she wanted a life that was on its way up. She can do it, I swear, you know, and then the last stumbling block, like, oh, no, no. Yeah. No, that's quite possible. That's a perfectly valid interpretation. That's a very open for interpretation piece, I think.
I like when poems are like that. You can go many ways.
I think it says more about me than I'm just like, did she die? Because, like, literally my first interpretation of this piece is, like, her falling down the stairs and, like, cracking her head open, and I'm like, oh, that's dark. But it's not really the piece that's dark, it's me.
I think I've just fallen downstairs so many times that, like, I feel like it's a regular thing. Because I have a problem with stairs.
When I was, like, I don't know, 19 or something like that, I was coming down the, my mom's house had these really steep stairs. I went up to, like, the attic, and my bedroom was in the attic because it's kind of a taller attic, you know, like, it was, you could stand up in there. And so my room was up there, and I was coming down the stairs, and I started sliding, and I could feel myself sliding, and I was starting to slide head first, and I managed to turn myself around and go feet first, but then I was like a torpedo, and I just kicked the entire wall and door out at the bottom of the stairs. They just came, like, crashing out of the bottom. And my mom came running, and she's like, are you okay? And I'm like, I'm fine, but, like, I destroyed the stairs. Like, but, hey, I wasn't dead. If I'd gone head first, that would have been really bad. But when I think of falling down the stairs, that's the falling down the stairs that I think of, because that was a wild ride. I had, like, neighbors coming over to see what happened, because it was really loud.
Yeah, you know it was a big crash when, like, you brought a crowd from other houses.
I mean, I kicked out an entire wall. Like,
yeah.
the whole wall. The door and the wall it was attached to went slamming into the other wall.
That is pretty intense.
Yeah. I'm just like, I'm glad I got turned around so I went feet first, because head first probably would not end well.
What? No. I've definitely done head first, but I just kind of left, like, a dent in the drywall. I did not break down the whole wall.
Yeah, the whole wall, yeah.
That's
yeah,
a big
it was wild. So when I think of falling down the stairs, that's what I think of. Anyway, I'll stop with my random side story. We have about 9 minutes left. Where are we off to?
All right, I'm going to play the audio by Jaskaran.
Hymns of Freedom. In my heart center, the wind from the east coast carries the nation's mist, dispersed from a globe, along with Woodham, Carded, Patterson, with obscure voices lived in hell. Hymns of Freedom. An audacious form of peace has been died, Asian soldiers unpaid, seeking vengeance against torn pieces of the sky, wiping out their euphoric immortality, sucking nectar from the blues, drawing final curtains on their own detecting. Storm battered and rain assailed, an inkling of hope lingers in sunset auto glow as it goes of night. Thy pale skin, so luring, and wrapping eyes and sand, as peace seals over a board of angels, forming a walls with silver leaves, hummingbird singing, are you getting there?
Thank you for the SoundCloud, Jaskaran. I really enjoyed the read. I also really found the background music that you chose incredibly pleasant. It felt like tropical, but not super tropical, just very relaxing. Anyway, thank you so much for the SoundCloud and so much for the write. And then reading about this, again, such beautiful and delicate imagery that really ties so much joy into this. You know, in my heart's winter, the wind from the east coast carries the nascent mist dispersed from my globe, along with the flotsam, crowded petals sing with obscured voices dipped in husk. Freedom. You know, in my heart's winter, so like in the saddest moments, you know, the tears, which is what I get from the nascent mist dispersed from my globe, carries away the bad things and brings beauty into life. You know, even sadness can be beautiful. And then, you know, an audacious swarm of bees hustling like Russian soldiers on parade. That's in quotes, which, you know, I'm not sure what it's referencing, but it is a very interesting phrase. Seeking vengeance against torn pieces of a blue sky, wiping out their euphoric moment of the day, sucking nectar from primrose, drawing final curtains on their only tuck-in. You know, these angry bees who are railing against the sky, you know, erasing all of their happiness, wasting it on this anger and killing themselves in it, you know, drawing final curtains on their only tuck-in, you know, because bees, when they sing, they're done. You know, to lose yourself to that anger. Storm battered and rain assailed, an inkling of hope lingers, and the sunset's afterglow at the birth of night. Thy pearlescent skin so alluring, enrapturing eyes ensnared, as peace steals over abode of the angels, performing a waltz with shriveled leaves, hummingbirds singing out fading day. You know, to watch, you know, as even the storm rails against the weather, you know, hope is still there. There's still beauty in all of this. And it's, I think, evident in the rest of your piece as well. Like, you know, even as you're describing a sadness, even as you're describing angry bees and the railing of the rain, it's done so elegantly and eloquently that that beauty isn't lost. You know, as peace steals over a boat of the angels performing a waltz of the shriveled leaves, hummingbirds singing out the fading day. You know, even as it all comes to the end, you know, there's beauty in that, you know, in the appreciation of the nature. You know, even as you watch it fade, you know, especially I think with nods to the weather and to bees in particular. I think this is, you know, got some environmental notes to it, in my opinion. And it also says to me about the beauty of pain and anger and loss. It's a lovely write. So thank you, Jess Graham. Your thoughts, Daisiana.
I really liked it. The part about the bees struck me the most. An audacious swarm of bees hustling like Russian soldiers on parade, seeking vengeance against torn pieces of a blue sky. I really like that, torn pieces of a blue sky. And seeking vengeance against the sky. It's just such a powerful image. Wiping out their euphoric moments of the day. It's like their own euphoric moment, their happy moment, they're wiping it out. It's just such an aggressive image with these bees. And bees are actually quite peaceful creatures, really. But they have a rap for being aggressive because they do protect themselves. But it's something about that swarm and the vengeance against the sky. Some really interesting imagery in here. And I love the spacing that he used in the first stanza. I don't even know how to describe that shape. I don't know, the spacing is very interesting. So you have to physically look at it because my words are failing me. But I think it's wonderful. So thank you, Jasperan, for sharing this and for recording an audio. You're really great for usually including an audio. I appreciate that. Ooh. And Blog Talk is thanks. Blog Talk is telling me that we are out of time. So I have a contest called Stop Shrinking, it just closed, but I'm going to open it again. We only had 4 entries. So I'm opening it up for next week, and it's a quote, "Stop shrinking to fit places you've outgrown." So write us a poem for that, and we will see you next week. Thanks, Babbler. Thanks, everyone who wrote.
Yes, thank you, everybody. Always love it. Wonderful write.